always, stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Why are we laughing?
I don't know. Because we've been doing this for a half an hour and just, you know, we finally decided to hit the record.
Actually, button. We have been doing it for about
pretty much. So what you been up to?
Reading books and stuff.
Reading books and stuff, same here.
Summer books.
And by reading, I mean listening to. But but it's good, you know, summer stuff. That's what I do in the summer.
Summer stuff, yeah. Well, you do read in the winter too. But.
Well... So it's high summer here in Doppeltown.
Even though it's spring,
it is high summer. We got a real nice, apparently I heard some thunder earlier today.
Yeah.
Although it was not raining in the courtyard. No. In the atrium, rather.
No.
But it was trying.
It was a faux storm.
Faux storm. Apparently it was stormy south here. South of here, though.
It looked really awesome, though. It looked like the beginning of the flood. And Noah's putting the animals on the ark.
It was not.
It was quite a biblical looking sky.
It was not post-diluvian. It was not antediluvian. It was straight up luvian. Diluvian.
What does that mean?
Deluve is like, it comes from deluge.
Oh.
Yeah. Diluvian. Antediluvian is before the flood. Post-diluvian is after the flood.
Does it mean that the actual biblical flood?
The biblical flood.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Who came up with that bullshit?
Oh, biblical scholars. Speaking of biblical scholars.
Na 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 na. Every time an angel rings, a bird gets its wings.
Every time a cow rings its bell.
Somebody writes a crappy book.
So, should we get into it?
Yes, let's just do it.
Let's do it. All right, okay. So the book, as you know.
We already know.
Angelology, Danielle Tussoni. Published March of this year in America, but apparently all the rage in England.
Yes, and Will Smith's production company has bought the rights to make a movie out of it before it was even published.
Yeah, in a bidding war. In fact, the book itself was shopped around, was agented off to a bunch of different publishers, and there was a bidding war over that too. And
really?
Oh, yes, and the winning bidder was well into the six figures.
It must have been before the book was written.
I don't know. But it was a big, the big book expo in New York a couple months ago prominently featured this book. It was like a big splashy book coming out from Viking.
Are you freaking kidding me?
No.
See, I heard the author being interviewed on the radio, and that's where I got wind of this.
Yeah.
Book, because she was in Paris. Writing something else, apparently, and
I'm guessing the sequel.
She sounded very nice. Mm-hmm. She sounded like a very...
Yeah, she's a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, which is a big deal writing academy here in the States. And
is it in Iowa?
And it's actually in Iowa. The Iowa Writers' Workshop is a big deal. If you get into the Iowa Writers' Workshop, you are learning from the best.
Apparently, she didn't get much feedback.
I don't know. I think we are generally of the same opinion on this book, but I think your opinion is much more strong.
I felt like I wasted my time.
Really?
I had to force myself to finish the book.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't really experience that quite. If anybody's going to experience it, will be me.
Yes, that's probably true, yes.
That's a fair statement, but...
I did not have to force myself. I actually started listening to it, and I found myself drawn in quite early on and quite easily, and I was very interested for a long time, and then it all went away. But pretty late in the book, it went away.
I think you're really easy. I think I've come to that conclusion.
I am easy. Like some. You are really.
Because you're easy. Da, 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 da. Well,
I'm easy like Sunday morning. Sorry.
Yeah, there was probably an outline of a pretty good book there, but
yeah. So, let me say a few things about what I liked about it.
Yeah, please do. Shoot them down,
and you'll shoot them down.
One.
This one you won't be able to shoot down because you haven't experienced it. I thought the reading, like I said, I listened to this book. The reading was very good, very expressive, very. I believe we were discussing at some point when the microphone was not on. That a really good reader can take pretty lousy prose and make it kind of sing. Mm-hmm. And this reader does that for the most part. And I was aware of that. So much so. So that's what helped me get into the book.
So then, how did you? Was it the characters that she was?
There was a couple
was speaking of for that seemed to grab you.
Yeah, there were a few characters. A few characters that she spoke for specifically that it really grabbed me. The old nun, Sister
Celestia.
Celestia. Mm-hmm. Her friend slash rival, Gabriella.
Yeah, Sister Gabriella.
Just Gabriella something or other.
Oh, Gabriella, the grandmother.
The main character, one of the main characters' grandmother. I actually found myself quite interested in the character of. The angel, the main bad guy. Damn it, I'm blanking on his name.
Percival.
Percival. Yeah, Percival. Something or other.
Yeah. Percival the angel.
Yeah, Percival. And his whole family. I thought was really interesting. Getting back to my earlier point, the reading. Was so strong that when a line was so weak that even this reader couldn't make it work,
mm-hmm.
that made me even more conscious of bad prose, bad writing. It kind of worked against the author a little bit, but that didn't happen very often.
I think all right. So that's the one thing you liked. What was the other thing you liked about it?
I liked the
which really has nothing to do with the book if you think about it. You like the performance.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I like the mythology. The first time it was explained, I'll just say that.
Well, and that mythology is not new.
Oh no,
that
oh,
is.
No. It's not at all new.
A well-worn.
Yeah, the legend of the Nephilim. The whole
it has been used in many, 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 many books.
Yes, I know.
The
thing that I like the most.
And many.
The thing that I like the most
uh-huh.
was the whole notion of turning angels and angel kind into a bunch of mewling, spoiled infant brats and taking down the whole guardian angel movement, which the whole New Age angel movement. Picking him down more than a few pegs, because that whole movement just drives me crazy.
Well, those weren't really guardian angels. These were, like, bad angels.
Yeah,
these
there's no real angels. Mention of guardian angels in here. This angel, people, I like to, what I like to think is that some people are picking up this book thinking angelology. It's like, ooh, yeah, I like angels. I have little angels. I have little figurines all over my house. And reading this book and coming away kind of, you know, shell-shocked, I think that would be that's kind of delightful.
I have to say there were only two things about this book that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
One,
when it ended.
No, one was the idea that their wings are attached to their lungs.
Yes,
I liked that idea for some reason.
And that was new. That was something I hadn't run into before.
No, uh-huh. I had an experience with a plant that told me plant leaves uh-huh. help with the rest.
Yes,
to respire. It's the same idea.
Yeah.
The second thing I liked, the only thing that I liked. Was there was that scene where there's the flames happening and the
church, the chapel. And Sister Celestina.
Celestina, yeah.
Comes in and does this whole ritual thing.
Oh,
and,
right. And brings down.
And brings down a real angel.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty cool.
That was a cool scene. That was a cool scene.
I like that.
It was very, very Harry Potter.
It was, yes. Well,
it was it was Dumbledore casting one last big spell and dying for it or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, whenever I took a little break, I would think about how this book maps onto some of the other big bestsellers. And I think this book is kind of, you know, cynically positioned to cash in on a lot of different trends. The whole Angelology College and the whole Angelology School. The Angelology School is freaking Hogwarts. To a degree. It's partly Hogwarts and it's partly...
It's more like the Watchers from Buffy is what I felt like.
Sure, sure. Or I was thinking of Jonathan Carroll and Mr. Strange.
It was more like that.
That kind of necromancy school.
Yeah.
It's very, some of the advertising actually for the book actually says this. It's part Da Vinci Code and part National Treasure.
Yeah.
When it devolves into the National Treasure, a sightseeing treasure hunt of,
with the Rockefeller.
New York City, I just like, okay, there's like an hour and a half of this left. I'm going to just bowl through today and it'll be done.
Well, and here's the problem with those kinds of books.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they solve within like 3 seconds something that has been
a mystery
for, you know, 50 years. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, one plus, if you take one and put a plus one, you're going to get two.
Oh my God, oh my God.
Oh my God.
It was right in front of us the whole time.
Right. That I find, and she literally, and I'm not kidding, she completed that whole mystery within 15 pages, 20 pages?
Something like that.
Like, the build-up?
Yeah, suddenly, yeah, there's this long build-up of the other half of Sister Innocenta's correspondence with Eleanor.
With Mrs. Rockefeller.
With Mrs. Rockefeller. Was it Agatha Rockefeller? Eleanor Rockefeller? Mrs. Rockefeller. And there's this big mystery. She's searching for the archives, is it people looking all over the world for these things, and
right,
and so suddenly they find it, and it's, you know, it's in an archive, of course, in the convent, and once they read it, you know, you have this perfect combination of people, you know, you have an art historian, curator,
right,
and they just.
It must be in the tapestry of the unicorn at the
they scratch their heads a little bit. But it's remarkably smooth, the recovery. No matter what obstacles got thrown in the way. Sure, one of the guys dies,
the red shirt.
Yeah, he was the red shirt, and Gabriella has to die because, you know, she's old and
she was kind of a whore, and because she's fucking angel.
Yeah, she was bad touched by an angel.
What was annoying about that was there's this combination lock, right?
Oh, yes.
And it's being guarded by somebody who's on the bad side.
Yes.
Who's working for the...
spy, yeah.
And they swoop in, and there's four combinations, numbers. And, of course... You try it like 3 times, and then it must be
click 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 click
click.
It's open. Hey,
open, and the bad guy swoops in and steals the thing. Well, if it was in a safe and they knew it was in there,
really,
they needed to wait for the combination to get in there.
Hey, all of the power and might of the Rockefeller family was standing in their way. Yeah, I'm not convinced either.
Yeah, that
it was.
That was. Bad. It was just bad, bad, bad.
What I thought was
lazy. It wasn't bad. It was lazy.
What I thought was happening in the last part of the book is that she realized, or maybe her editors realized, or her agent realized, you know, this is more than one book. What you need to do is you need to lay out some mythology here, make it really interesting.
Start a story, but then don't quite finish it. I mean, you have to finish like the immediate, like the mystery, the thriller part. But I mean, the end is very obviously set up for a sequel.
Well, and who didn't see it into page like?
I saw it four? On page four.
Yeah. Oh, she's gonna end up being one of the Nephilim.
Yeah. She's really into the Nephilim. Yet. Any orphan is going to find out her parentage sooner or later in this book.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened.
Oh, man. I can't go. I can't say enough about how much I.
You really. So, let's talk a little bit about our original plan for this particular podcast.
The original plan was that I had finished the book about a week and a half before you did.
Yeah.
And we talked. I said, "Don't even bother finishing it. You're just gonna guess what happens, and you'll probably be right."
And I was like, "Okay, that sounds good." I was about.
And I felt bad, so I thought you should just read it.
I was about an hour and a half into this, like 11-hour, listen, and I said, "Okay, that sounds like a great plan. Let's just do this tomorrow night." And that's about a week ago. And then I went to work the next day and I listened to another hour and a half, and then I got hooked. And I said, and I called you up and I said, "Hey, you know what? Actually, I think I'm gonna finish this."
Yeah.
I'm kind of digging it a little bit. So we have finished for this podcast worse books than this.
Yeah, we have.
Oh my yes.
But I mean, there were some other ridiculous things like the really bad. Angels that...
Oh, yeah, the rebel angels, fallen ones.
And no, not those, other ones. They're sort of the hybrid, lizardy-looking angels that wear black coats.
The soulless ones.
And they're fanning the flames with their wings. I thought that was the most ridiculous scene ever, next to the other more ridiculous scene. So those angels are going after the character who's the historian.
Yes.
And the grandmother's on the phone with him in her Jeep or whatever, getting him out of the building, and they jump into the car. Now, these angels can fly,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And this car speeds off with him in it, and they can't see him or find him.
There are a few logical...
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
There are a few logical... freaking sinkholes in this. First of all, one of the stated objectives of the angelologists, at least for some of them, is that the lyre is too dangerous to exist.
Right.
So,
what do? They put it together.
Instead of just like they figured out that it's in pieces.
Why not just leave it there?
Find one fucking piece, and destroy that. The whole thing is destroyed.
Yep.
That's all you need to do. But no, they have to find every piece. Die to find every piece.
Or when they first found it, why didn't they just destroy it?
Originally.
She explains that they can't destroy it because...
An angel needs to.
Only an angel can destroy it. So.
Or
an angel... Because they're not really angels. They're hybrids of...
Yes. It's ridiculous. So that she tries to... explain that away by saying that Gabriella knew that Evangeline was part angel, and so they were going to try to trick her into destroying it. But that doesn't hold water either.
Or why couldn't they have called an angel down using their magic square thing,
mm-hmm.
and had that angel destroy it?
Or just take it back to heaven. Yeah. Okay. That was that particular fraud. Maybe that's that may be why the last 2 hours or so were so annoying to me, because I could see it's like, okay, you want to destroy it? You've got the pick for it. Destroy that. There's a beginning. It's like, oh, now you have the crossbars. Break them in half.
But you couldn't. They couldn't.
Just give them to Angelina. Don't even tell Angelina why. Just say, "Angelina, break this. I'm going to break this when you break
that."
But
she wasn't in her full angel nest to do it. Ugh. She hadn't bloomed.
Maybe that's why.
Which I also think is weird.
That's
because
So did Gabriella know that once she touched the lyre that she was going to become an angel?
Well, why is she the only one that has to happen to?
Yeah.
Why nobody else touches a lyre to become an angel?
Yeah.
That was bullshitty.
Anyway, it's logic is kind of flawed.
And that's where you go. I mean, if it was written, and of course you already alluded to it, but I talked about it before we started taping. They explain the same mythology, I counted at least 6 times.
Yeah. I mean,
and it isn't even like they added anything to it.
Yeah, no.
They just tell it again, and then again, and then again, and then again.
And then again.
And it was almost like they were doing that thing where they're explaining to a character something that we, the reader, just read.
Yeah.
So why are you explaining? We already read this.
Yeah, you can just why align that.
Yeah. You could have, like, faded out.
Yeah.
Just and like, after he told her the whole story,
yeah.
She believed, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But she didn't do that.
She didn't do that.
The author didn't do that.
There was, I mean, it's fun. I've read books where they, you know, you get, like, the barest outlines of the mythology. Or even, like, in literary fiction, you'll get, like, the basic story of what happened. You know, why is he in a wheelchair? Well, he fell down the stairs. It was a long time. It was a long time ago. Right. And that's you know the that end. Yeah. The end. But then later in the book, somebody else talks about it, and
he didn't really fall.
He didn't really fall.
He threw himself down.
He threw himself down the down there after he came back from this party.
Right. More gets added.
More gets added. More and more gets added, and the information that gets added. Every opportunity you have to retell the story, you can really change the story and make it much more interesting. And not in this case, it is literally reading the scripture every Sunday over and over again.
And I went back
until you can't hear it anymore.
I went back to the scripture just to see exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 2 lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. In Genesis. That's it.
About giants in the earth.
The Nephilim. Who were the heroes of old.
Yes. Yeah.
Who had their way with women.
Yep.
And so, but there were germs of things there, but they were done so, I just thought they were just done so poorly, or she didn't spend enough time.
Yeah.
She didn't spend enough time with Percival's family. You get the gist. It was almost like upstairs, downstairs.
Yeah.
I know. That's what it felt like to me.
It was pretty suggestive, and that was when I first got into the Percival family and started finding out about Percival,
and their vanity and Grigori. Who has the best
Percival Grigori,
yeah,
and their vanity and their
who has the nicest wings,
all that kind of stuff. I thought that was really fascinating. I'm like, okay, I want to, you know, every 30, 50 pages or so, we're gonna get another section about these guys, and it's gonna be great.
Yeah, but they didn't.
They didn't. You meet the mother twice. You meet the sister, and she dies, and you just look at enough, and then Percival dies at the end. Although I gotta think that in the sequel, and there will be one, we were gonna find out a lot more about his mother, who seems quite formidable.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that we're told that they, you know, rule humanity, but you don't really get, I don't know. They don't seem that wicked, you know, in a way, you know, they seem vain
they're very
like
vain.
The mafia kind of.
Well, there's a scene that makes them seem very, very wicked. That's the, describing, I believe it's Percival's grandfather's exploits in India when, Indians were getting uppity, and they were starting to, I think it was the, what do they call it, the something revolt, the Sepoy revolt?
Yeah.
He just decides ruthlessly, you know, I'm going to,
oh, yeah,
I'm
just
going
kill
to,
their...
I'm going to, well, he doesn't just kill them, he takes their children, yeah. Puts them down in a cannon barrel.
Yeah, that was pretty gruesome. That was pretty gruesome.
Blows their body parts all over the town.
Yeah.
And then makes the parents clean up, little arms and legs.
Yeah, that was gruesome.
That was really gruesome. And that, honestly, that was really all you needed to know about how far angels are willing to go, or Nephilim are willing to
go.
Yeah,
but then they're more wicked than humans.
Exactly.
That was the thing. They weren't any more wicked than humans.
Well, that's
what it felt like.
That's one of the things I didn't like, is that the implication is left there, and this is something that I see from time to time in books, that I think is kind of cheap and it's kind of dangerous. Actually, it's irresponsible, I think. And that is to create a false bad guy to explain all the real evil in the world.
Yeah.
And that's what she does here. Like, these, you get the impression that all the power, and all the ruthlessness in the world is concentrated in the Nephilim. In these,
and that humans have no...
And they're just pawns. Yeah. They don't have any control, and they don't have any blame, really.
Right.
As you see that in the whole Illuminati mythology, and the whole thing with the Masons, and blaming the Masons for everything. It's frankly paranoid.
Well, and also, if these creatures were that powerful,
mm-hmm.
why didn't they just wipe out those nuns like right away?
Yeah.
What was holding anybody back?
Yeah,
I mean, really.
Yeah,
the way this book is, and I also want to point out something about the Indians and the canon and the again going back to that book we read, Kali.
Oh yeah,
having to kill a child is really an easy, cheap shorthand. Oh, this person's ruthless.
Ruthless and super evil. It's
right. It's
the Kaiser Soze gambit.
It's so cheap. That's what it felt like to me. Like,
yeah.
This is cheap.
That's a hot spot for you. Whenever that happens, you're going to be pissed off.
It does. It kind of pisses me off whenever that happens.
Yeah.
It's lazy, I think.
It could be a little lazy. Some people would say it's brave. It's like, you know, this is going there. Oh, I'm totally going there. Uh-huh.
It's not brave because it's been done.
Yes, it has been done. So, anyway.
But that's a good point that, it makes all the wickedness bought from somebody else, and it's humans. And actually, the wickedness is no less wicked than any human.
Yeah, no. It's,
what
it's,
any
it's,
cruel human has
it's,
done.
It's total
throughout time.
It's total paranoid logic. It's it's blaming the liberals. It's blaming the capitalists. It's blaming the gun toting rednecks. It's blaming. You work in the mental health profession. When paranoids. They tend to like pick the same objects of their paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that's cultural.
It's cultural, but it's also time. It also has to do with time. So, in the 70s, it was like UFOs and
Atlantis,
things like that.
Ancient astronauts
the upper Midwest of the United States in the 20s.
Blacks.
It wasn't blacks. It was
Jews.
It was the local lodge.
Oh, the lodge.
It was like the woodcutter's lodge,
oh.
Or the elk's lodge. If you weren't a member of it, they were all conspiring against you.
Oh,
and that was really, really common
oh.
among paranoids back then. And today it's what is it? George Bush. It's 9/11. It's the secret forces behind 9/11. It's still the Illuminati. It's the angels. It's the evil angels. So. And I think that it's a profoundly unhelpful way to characterize the world.
I think it's a good... Now, if the angels and the humans were conspiring with each other...
Yes.
That would be...
Yes. I mean, and there are, there are, collaborators. We meet one in the church at the end, where the tone box is being kept. The safe.
Right.
He's waiting for the combination.
Right.
But
just that idea that, if only they weren't here, then everything would be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like what feminism did with men.
Yes, that's right. I know. reminds me of.
If only women were ruling the world, then they would be. And then there's when women do evil things, it's because men corrupted them.
Corrupted them, yes.
You know, she's acting like how a man.
There's a really great book called The Female Man, from the early 70s by this sci-fi writer named Joanna Russ, in which there is a society in which there are no men, but it is striated and stratified and
of course it is. There was a golden age where matriarchs were in power and they worshipped a goddess and everything was equal. And
yeah.
Bullshit.
No, people naturally cast themselves up and cast each other down.
Yep. It's just about power.
Yep. So, still, I enjoyed like 80% of of reading this book, and that's pretty damn good.
I can't believe you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed 5% of it.
Ooh, your criteria are so stringent. You gonna read the sequel?
No, I don't think I will.
If I can get it on audio, pop it in, and I'll get on my bike, and I'll give it a good 2 hours.
I don't think it's fair, quite frankly, that you listen to the books. I think you should be reading them.
I disagree.
Because I don't think you're really getting the book. I think you're getting a performance, and that's not the book. It does not give a good view of the book.
I'm getting that person's performances, and you're getting your own performance.
No.
And I bet you these people are better reader than you are. Audio reader. All books are performances.
It's such a different experience.
Yes. It is a very different experience.
It's different to go see Shakespeare than to read Shakespeare.
Yes, it is. It's a better experience. What does that do to your logic?
What's a better experience?
To see it.
Right, but even some crappy Shakespeare can be...
I know.
I mean, Shakespeare, not everything Shakespeare wrote was amazing.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, no, yeah.
But a performance can lift...
Are you saying it's better or worse, a performance?
It's not the same. They're just two different things, what I'm saying.
You're right. It's absolutely two different things.
You're adding another person into the equation.
Yeah.
And they're...
I will agree with that. Nevertheless, I'm still going to listen to what I'm saying. I don't think it's
fair.
It's totally fair. You'd listen too if you could.
No,
For that horrible accent.
No, because I read faster than I listen.
I know. I listen faster than I read because I read when I'm sitting down in a chair with good light, and I listen wherever I am.
Mm. Oh, an angel just got its wings. Hey, why did she at the end? What was her reasons for destroying the lyre? And why did she? Yeah, why did she destroy the lyre?
She destroyed the lyre because because of all the reasons they told her to, which is that it's too dangerous to exist. But also because she now has firsthand experience with how tempting it is, not just to humanity but to her. So
where could this book even go at this point?
She's an angel now, and
a Nephilim.
She's a Nephilim of a particularly pure sort, apparently, with big, lovely wings, which is the measure of that in angel circles. And but she has an enemy, which used to be her love interest. That is Verlaine.
The love interest?
Yeah. Don't you remember their unrequited passion for each other that blooms up out of nothing over the course of 36 hours?
No.
Didn't you buy that?
No.
Did you just take that hook, line, and sinker? I
mean, no.
36 hours.
No.
They were in love.
They were? I totally didn't catch that.
I don't know. Maybe you weren't reading it properly.
Shut up. reading very quickly. Yes, you were. Please get done.
Yeah, I know. A little romance blooms between them because it has to, because that way, that way you can put that in there. And again, and I've talked about this over and over again, there were some scenes that were just freaking script writing. He runs across the chapel, his gray suit alternating in color, in light and shadow, and light and then shadow. Like, oh yeah, we're totally going to set that up. Lighting and action. Click, 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 click. Light, shadow, light, shadow, light, shadow.
So, I'm a fucking angel. God damn it.
You know, I'll
never be able to wear strapless again.
I gotta think Will Smith is gonna bring nothing but quality to this production.
I don't think he'll be in it.
No, he won't. He's just producing it. Or he might be in it. He'll he'll be one of the angel instructors at the Angel Academy in Paris.
Angel Academy.
Okay, here's another thing that I liked. The whole whenever they talked about like topics of study in angel school, like angel music and studying the structure of the angel choirs and things like that, and angel hierarchies. I thought that was hilarious. And kind of fun to think about.
I think the word angelology is ridiculous.
Word angelology is ridiculous. So this book is being touted as, you know, look, move over, sparkly vampires. Yes. It's angels' time, right? Wow. Yeah. You think it's gonna take?
No,
I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
And you know what my biggest indication of that was?
What?
I went to the Wikipedia page like just before you came over,
okay,
to see if there was a big swell of interest in this.
Yeah,
there'd be a very detailed like plot synopsis and all the characters and stuff like that. Right now, it's just the bare bones, and like, you know how they'll, when you look up a book on Wikipedia, they'll give all the main characters and their motivations and their, you know, their relationships, right, and stuff like that. There are only three characters named. Evangeline.
Yeah.
Percival Grigori.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, the guy who leads the expedition to the Carpathians.
Father.
Not that guy. But the guy that Gabrielle marries.
Yeah. That guy.
But there's no mention of Celestina. There's no mention of Gabrielle. There's no mention of any of the members of the Grigori family other than Percival. There's no mention of this priest, the monk who originally discovers the gate to hell.
Well, that was another one.
You didn't like that?
Well, I did. I liked.
Speaking of another one, we're talking about the description of the manuscript.
No, I did like that scene where they go down and there's the angel and they're dissecting it. Uh-huh. And then they go down and then she goes down and finds the lyre and sees the gate and where the fallen angel, the watchers are. Yeah. And I liked that held promise.
Yeah, that was roughly where it was.
Then nothing.
That was great. And also the way it was prefigured in that medieval manuscript.
And I think...
And, you know, the finding of the manuscript and all this, the secrecy within the Angelology Academy.
I think part of the problem with the book is they introduced the reality that these things existed way too soon in the book. It should have become more of a discovery, mm-hmm, not just on the main character's part, but it should have been a discovery on the reader's part.
Yeah.
It should have been suspect of whether this, well, is this real or not real?
And the discovery on the main character's part, I mean, as far as I remember, the two main characters that have to believe are Evangeline and Verlaine, are two humans.
Right.
Evangeline kind of scratches her head, takes a little nap, and then believes.
Right.
And Verlaine does a little bit less.
Yes. Yes.
Mostly because he actually sees.
And that's part of the problem, I think, with the book. And if the discovery would have happened 3/4 into the book, and it remained more of a mystery, sure, and these people telling them things, but nobody's really believing it, mm-hmm, and we don't really get to see that other family...
Mm-hmm.
So much.
So that element was bothering me a bit, but I kind of explained it away to myself by modeling it on that again, that Jonathan Norrell and Mr. Strange, or Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, that's what it is, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell book, in which magic is simply there. Nobody, I mean, it's very rare. There's only really two people who are doing magic in this England at this time. Other than that, it's a very kind of a familiar Britain, but there is no doubt. It's not explained. This is simply the way the
world
is. That's
a different book.
Well, it is a different book.
I mean, that's a different...
It is. And in this book, I thought, well, maybe she's trying to go for that. Maybe people just kind of believe that angels are there. But then when I got to the denouement, where they're running through the climax, when they're trying to find all the pieces and they're finding them, and there's all the concern about, put your wings away, we don't want to be discovered. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be a big secret. So where's the damn skepticism?
Right. Yes.
So that was a bit of a bobble. Yeah. Not more than a bobble. It was a complete fumble.
So, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, I will probably try to obtain a copy of the audio of the sequel should it come out. I'll also probably go see the movie if it ever gets made.
I would probably see the movie only because I'm thinking the movie might, because you can show things,
yes,
better than you sometimes in a swifter way.
Yeah, and it has happened that silk purses have been made out of sow's ears.
They are going to have to. People with wings look ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they are going to have to do something about that.
Yes.
How they will do that, I do not know.
I don't know. I mean, whenever I go to the Renaissance Festival and people are wearing fairy wings and stuff like that, it looks just totally great.
Now, if I was going to, if somebody's really into the Nephilim whole idea, I would read the series of book called The Fallen, which was also made into an ABC Family miniseries.
Oh.
And it's a juvenile fiction.
Well, that sounds interesting.
That's I think it's called The Fallen. That was much better. And again, it's the same idea.
Yeah.
Where this kid, and then he finds out who he is.
Yeah,
and then
he's an angel.
As he becomes an adolescent, then he sprouts wings along with pubic hair. And
awkward. <it's> like, I can't go to gym today.
I'm having a wing boner.
I can't go to gym today. I'm sick.
And there's that whole thing. But,
yeah, this book did remind me. I was thinking of other treatments of angels in fantasy and sci-fi and even horror literature. There's the Gabriel Garcia Marquez story, the Very Old Man with Enormous Wings, which is just about people finding this man with this old man with rotting, decaying wings, and just what they make of that. You never know if he's an angel or anything. He's just this man with wings that's kind of dying, and then he dies. The Vatican, wants confirmation, and another one that I thought of was maybe that was the only one.
Wings of Desire.
Oh yeah, Wings of Desire. Thank you. Yeah, Wings of Desire, and its sequel, Far Away, So Close, about angels.
Of Desire was a much better movie.
Much, much better movie
than Far Away, So Close.
Yeah, yeah. Although it's very slow. I remember falling asleep twice trying to watch that movie.
Then there's Michael.
Oh, yes, there is Michael. Yeah, the chain-smoking, bib overhauls wearing angel.
John Travolta. Another stellar performance.
I'm trying to think of some other ones, but maybe that's enough.
Of angel...
angel-oriented
movies.
I wonder. There's got to be a large and growing body of actual Christian works about angels on Earth, working in their mysterious ways.
Oh yeah, there is. There's the, is it called the Clear and Present?
Clear and Present Angel.
There is a one where there's this town. And all these bad things are happening. So I read this when I was in the seminary.
And he gave it to me. So, you know, there's all these things, bad things happening to Tom, so you're seeing it from the human. And then behind that is this holy war going on. There's angels standing behind people when they're praying, and I forget what it's called. Awesome. It's called Piercing the Darkness.
Piercing the Darkness.
Oh, I just thought of another one. This one is really good, and I recommend that you and all of our listeners, well, our listener, you, go out and read this story. It's probably available online, and I know that there's a podcast of it that you can get at Starship Sofa. No, not Starship Sofa. At it's either Escape Pod or Pseudopod. I think it's Escape Pod.
Moon Landing Barca Lounger?
Nope. It is called, and the story is called Hell is the Absence of God. And it is by Ted Chiang, C-H-I-A-N-G, Ted Chiang. He is, for my money, the best writer of science fiction today.
Huh.
And he's so massively unprolific. He only writes short stories. He's got maybe a dozen of them. And each one of them that I've read are freaking life-changing.
Oh.
And this is a fantastic one.
And it's called what?
Hell is the Absence of God.
Hell is the Absence of God.
And what it's about, it takes place in this world where God and the angels are made manifest occasionally, but completely obviously. I mean, there is hell is real. Heaven is real. Angels are real. So what happens is it starts off with like the angel Azazel destroyed Calcutta today. And what happens is angels visit the earth, and they walk the earth, and they're like freaking Godzilla. There's this blinding light. You can't look at them. They stride across the earth, destroying cities, working basically in generally mysterious ways. Which is how life is, you know. Massive destruction comes out. They're basically like hurricanes or earthquakes. But they're an angel, and they can satellite images can verify which angel it is and what they're doing, and then they go away. And so people kind of deal with this. But also, if you are, if you do not lead a righteous life, you go to hell. And hell is not burning flames. It is simply the absence of God. And people who are living can look down. They just look down and they can see people in hell. And so our main character has lost his wife, who has committed suicide, and she's in hell, and it looks just like, you know, New York City. And she's like, gets in a cab and she goes to work. And it is tremendously evocative.
Oh, interesting.
It's a really, really, really good story. So check it out. That's a good story about angels. That really
the
makes
problem
me
with
it.
The angel idea is that mm-hmm. there's always God behind all of it, right?
Yeah.
And if there's this God that's supposedly so powerful and blah, 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 why does he need the angels?
Oh, I know.
There's always that shortcoming that somehow he can't intervene directly. He's sort of hogtied by his own self.
Yeah.
So he has this other,
I know, that's,
these other creatures who do these things. It's just
this. I mean, that's one of the things that I thought was ridiculous about this book was, yes, it's built. I mean, it uses the terminology of frankly Catholic.
It's Catholicism.
It's Catholicism. I mean, and to a ridiculous extent. I mean, every name has some sort of Catholic.
Evangeline, which is
Celestina.
one of the most overused. Names
for Catholic girls.
Yeah, well, and there's songs, Evangeline.
Oh, I know.
Whatever this.
I
mean, it's.
I know, but even like Gabriella, Percival.
Yeah.
I mean, every freaking name is. It comes out of like a some medieval text.
Right.
And it was getting kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
And it's like when the Verlaine shows up, I was like, oh, are we gonna get a Rambeau too? You know. And that was kind of annoying, I will admit.
I think the best book about angels mm-hmm. was The Amber Spyglass.
Yes.
I also think
I think this book actually has aspirations to be kind of like those Philip Pullman books, and it just fails because in the Philip Pullman books, you have all these these forces on various planes of existence acting just like, you know, jealous, nasty humans. And behind it all, there is a god who you find out
is... Well, he's just called the... he's not called God.
He's called the Authority.
The Authority.
I know, which is really fantastic. This book, and maybe this will come in sequels, needs some sort of... Its cosmology needs to be fleshed out. And because it just falls apart.
Yeah, that's the... Yes.
It just falls apart.
Which, that's why vampires are much easier to work with.
Yeah, because
in a way. Because you can just have a... you can have a deist god.
Yeah.
Who's way, way in the background.
Uh-huh.
And has no
yep.
desire to intervene.
Yep.
But, you know, you add this level of interaction.
Interaction and structure and hierarchy. And,
right.
And
the buck stops somewhere when you have a hierarchy.
Yes, it does.
Right?
And
lazy.
It's not lazy. I think it's just being deceptive. Maybe she's holding back her trump cards for later books.
Yeah, maybe there's a better book.
Yeah, maybe this is a setup for a better book. And I believe that better book could be out there. By this author. Possibly.
Funny. You know, another better angel book is that book called Archangel, the sci-fi book written by an author here in Doppeltown. It's a series, I think it's three books, but it takes place, the angels take place within the net. And,
okay.
And they're sort of constructs
uh-huh.
that actually become more real.
Sure.
And it's kind of, it's a future where sort of the church runs the internet and
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've talked this thing to death.
Yeah.
To death. So, I don't know about you, but my drink is gone. So, maybe I think we should mix another one.
We should re-cocktail.
Let us re-cocktail, for it is, once again,
cocktail time.
Hey, okay, so what are we going to drink here?
Well, of course, the obvious drink.
The drink is called Bad Touch by an Angel. And so...
You get a tumbler.
A tumbler.
Tall, like a Tom's Collins glass almost.
Yep. And you put in, on the bottom of it, you put in a slice of ginger and a little bit of lemon rind and a couple dashes of Angostura bitters, if you can find it again. I think you can. I think it's available.
Yeah, it is now. Yeah.
And then muddle the hell out of that. Get those, yeah. Release those delicious juices.
Release the volatiles.
Release the volatiles. Then pack the glass with ice.
Crushed
ice if you can. And then pour over that two shots of hard apple cider. Sparkling if you can get it.
No.
No?
It's one shot of bourbon.
And then one shot of bourbon. Oh, that's right.
It's one shot of bourbon.
A shot of bourbon. And then the most obvious ingredient, wait for it, Frangelico. One shot of that.
And then top it with two shots of Well, it might take more than two shots.
Might take more shots than that. And I would actually put a straw in this or some kind of stir stick because you're going to want to bring up the essences from the bottom as you drink.
Yeah.
You
can garnish it with candied ginger.
Candied ginger or a lemon slice or something like that would be nice.
Yeah.
There it is. Bad Touch by an Angel.
I don't know why it makes me laugh.
It's funny.
I know.
All right. Okay. It's good.
Chin chin.
All right, hey, we're done. Let's go downstairs.
Let's go down to the cellar.
We have to do something completely the opposite from angels.
Yes. Which would be...
The devils.
Housekeepers.
Devils. So, you know, Joe Hill, who was one of our first
authors. We love Joe Hill.
We love Joe Hill. I really enjoy his books. And he's got a new one out called Horns. Let's read that sucker.
Is it about like a, is it like about a man who is with a Viagra erection that he can't get rid of? He's super horny?
I'm guessing that's exactly what it's about, yes. And hijinks ensue.
Hijinks. All right. That was the quick. That was quick.
I know. Well, it's because we planned ahead this time.
That's right.
All right. Get back upstairs.
Joe Hill Horns.
Joe Hill Horns. Bam. Do you have anything else?
I have anything to add. I'm reading a great book called Sandman Slim.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the author. I totally recommend this book.
Excellent.
It's about a guy who's sent to hell and comes back from hell after living a gladiator's life in hell. Mm-hmm. And is coming back to avenge himself. And it's got, it's an urban magic kind of thing. It's good.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's a romp. It's a good romp. Summer romp.
Well, I just finished this book called Angelology. Oh, actually, we talked about that. I'm going to read this new book, I think, called Horn.
No, you already read it.
I don't know what I'm going to be.
Do you have any?
I've seen movies. I watch movies sometimes.
All right.
Did we have the discussion about Human Centipede yet?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it because I went and saw the
the preview?
Yeah.
I know.
I won't be watching that movie.
No, I shan't either. I'm pretty excited about the new movie called Splice that's coming out. That looks pretty good. There's lots of other horror movies coming out, all of which I will probably see. I probably won't see any of them until they come out on DVD.
However, who goes to movies anymore?
Who goes to movies anymore? Now, I'm pretty excited. I will go see Splice in the theater. And I'm also pretty excited about the new George Romero zombie movie. Which will probably suck, but I don't care.
It got really bad reviews.
Yeah, so did the last one. You know, in the last
super,
one...
Super, super bad
The last
reviews.
One wasn't as bad as people say it was.
Are you super excited that Eclipse is coming out?
June yes, 30th? Totally. Team Jacob all the way. All right. Well, so...
Stephanie Meyer has single-handedly...
destroyed the vampire.
Yeah.
All by herself.
But there's so many vampire shows coming on the TV now.
I know. Because...
There's one called The Gates, and there's...
Yep. Yeah, you can destroy something by making it successful. That's what she did.
That's what she did. She sucked the life out of it.
She should write something. What she needs to do now is write books about Mormons. Let's see how that works. Anyway, right. That doesn't mean anything at all. I don't mean anything by that. So,
no judgment here.
All right, we do not judge.
That's going to be our next book. We're going to read the Book of Mormon.
Oh, no. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I think we're done.
I think we're way done.
I think we should tear off its wings and pop it in the microwave.
All right.
Bing.
Bye.
Bye.
If you had not have fallen, then I would not have found you. Angel flying too close to the ground. I patched up your broken wing and hung around a while, trying to keep your spirits up and your fever down. I knew someday you would fly away, but fast.